Angela Sloan is an investment advisor and representative of Sloan Financial Group, LLC. Investment and advisory services are offered through Madison Avenue Securities, LLC. MAS is a registered investment advisor, member FINRA and SIPC. MAS and Sloan Financial are not affiliated companies.
It's time for The Retirement Architect with Angela Sloan of Sloan Financial Group. This is the show for you. If you're a retiree or approaching retirement and you want to make sure your financial plan has a solid foundation, get ready to learn how to design your own retirement blueprint. Here's Angela.
Hello, folks out in Radio Land. Welcome to The Retirement Architect. This is Angela Sloan, and I want to welcome you and thank you so much for joining us today. And as all of you know, my main topic is getting you to and through retirement successfully. So today we're going to talk about a few topics. One is overconfidence. You know, are you overconfident with the things that are going on in the market today? We're going to talk about the three different ways to invest. We're going to talk about legacy planning. What do you want to leave behind to your children, or what do you not want to leave behind to your children? And then we're going to talk a lot to couples, because there's ways that couples can totally screw up their retirement. And my job is to try to keep that from happening. So getting into the overconfidence part, the old saying goes, overconfidence precedes carelessness. And there are many areas where we find people are overconfident in their financial life, which leads to carelessness and poor decisions. So a lot of people are overconfident in the stock market, or at least their ability to manage their stock market investments. And, you know, I have to ask myself, how often do I see this? And I can tell you that when the market is high, people get overconfident. And that's usually when people start buying into the market. Oh, well, it just keeps going up and I'm missing out. Let me buy in. But you got to remember Warren Buffett's rule. You sell when everybody else is buying, and you buy when everybody else is selling. Because, see, normally, the way we Americans do it, we buy high and sell low instead of buying low and selling high. We watch it. Oh, if it goes up again tomorrow, I'm going to buy. Well, let's see if it goes up again tomorrow. And if it does, I'm going to buy. And you keep playing that game. And when it gets almost to its peak, you've bought in. And then it starts going down. And you're sitting there going, boy, if it drops tomorrow, I'm selling it. Well, I'm going to hold on one more day. And if it drops again, I'm selling it. And by the time it hits almost bottom, you just can't take it anymore and you sell it. And that's the way we normally do the stock market. And when you get overconfident in where the market is, especially when it's up, that can be a big problem for you. And let's look at overconfidence in an amount of money in your savings or your portfolio. It seems that some people assume that they'll be just fine in retirement as long as they achieve a certain dollar figure in their account. And that's just not the case. There's many reasons why that's not the case. There's so many uncertainties as far as taxes, inflation, you know, what the market's going to do. You know, you could have another 2008 and wipe out almost half of what's in that account pretty quick. So you don't want to get overconfident because you think you've saved a lot of money. You've got to look at how long that money has to last you. So if you're overconfident because you think, gee, I've got $1 million or I have $2 million, there's no way I can run out of money, you're wrong. Don't be overconfident in how many zeros are in that portfolio. And sometimes I see people that have tried to oversimplify how certain products work, and they end up being overconfident in their understanding of what they own. And I've said many times, you don't know what you don't know. And I mentioned in another show earlier that, you know, sometimes I just like to hear you tell me how this works. I see you have a certain thing. I want you to tell me how it works, because I want to know what you think. You may not necessarily know how it works, but I want to know what you think. And then we may call that company and let that company tell you directly how it works. So don't oversimplify what you have in your portfolio. Don't assume that you know everything about it. Don't hesitate to call me and ask. I will tell you how it works, or I'll tell you how to find out how it works. And I never ask somebody to take my word for it. I always follow that up with the proof. So you can, if you have something you're not sure how it works, you can call me. It's 803-222-2892. And then I see some people that are just overconfident in their decision-making process, and they don't spend enough time truly evaluating their options before making a decision. So you have to ask how people can strike the perfect balance between doing research but without overthinking everything to the point that they get analysis paralysis. And I saw a research article not too long ago that said the average American spends more time planning their vacation than planning their retirement. And it was a lot more time. I can't remember the exact figure, but I thought, you know what? I see that every day. you don't want to get analysis paralysis, but you do want to have enough information before you to make a good decision. And one place where I see this is when you're deciding when and how to draw your Social Security. People just assume, well, gee, I can start drawing at 62, I'm going to. Or now I'm full retirement age, so I have to start drawing Social Security. That may or may not be the best decision for you. And you need that mapped out. You need to see the numbers of what it means if you start at this age, what it means if you wait until this age, and what it means if you wait until a different age, whether or not you have a spouse involved. You need to know exactly where you stand and how to get the most out of that Social Security. And it's not just Social Security. That's one big area that I see. But it's not just Social Security. So if you're in a decision-making process and you feel like you don't have all the answers, please give me a call. It's 803-222-2892. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about three ways to invest. And we've got the other topics to cover for the rest of the show, so listeners, don't go away. We'll be back in a moment.
Attention, business owners. You're probably paying too much personal income tax. Tax Law Solutions has helped business owners permanently reduce personal income taxes by 20 to 40%. Call 787-200-3359. That's 787-200-3359 or online at taxlawsolutions.net.
You're listening to The Retirement Architect. Here's Angela Sloan.
And welcome back to The Retirement Architect. This is Angela Sloan, and I want to thank you so much for listening in today. I promised you we were going to go over the three ways to invest. And, you know, almost any investment can be classified as one of three different models of investing. So I want to explore the pros and cons of each one of these main three. So, you know, first of all, there's the banking world, and there's pros and cons to having money in the bank. You know, right now, you could go take some money to the bank, and you've got $250,000 worth of FDIC insurance. So if that bank goes under, you're insured up to $250,000, and it gives you a certain amount of security. But the cons of having money in the bank is the interest rates right now. And, you know, we always use a 4% inflation rate, but even if you use the government's inflation rate of 2%, and you're at the bank and you're getting a half of a percent, or let's just give them the benefit of the doubt, say you're getting 1%. Folks, you're losing money. That is a guaranteed loss. If you're sitting in a money market getting 0.00 something, you're really at a loss. So really having too much money in the bank is not a good idea. I do tell my clients to keep emergency money on hand because you don't know. The car might break down, the refrigerator goes out, you know, things happen. But you don't want to keep too much money in the bank because that can be very costly. So, you know, there's the good and the bad in all of it. You know, second is the insurance world. So what's the good and the bad of that model? Well, the good is that, you know, you do have some state guarantee insurance on that, you know, but they give you guaranteed income. So you have guaranteed income. There's different ways of using stuff in the insurance world. And you never have to worry about that income. You know, you have immediate annuities. You can use what we talked about in another program earlier in the week about, you know, using life insurance for some of that income. So there's some very good points to using insurance instruments. The trade-off, and for the lack of better, I don't like to use the word bad from that model because it depends on what kind of product you're using, but the trade-off for having that guaranteed income is giving up some liquidity. So this would be, you know, when we use these, it's a pile of money that we're going to use for seed money to produce income is how we would use anything in the insurance world. You know, it's not where you would want to keep money that's liquid. So usually you're going to give up some liquidity of that money in order to have that guaranteed income. So it's a matter of using it the right kind of way. So it's a matter of positioning it right. And it's not for everybody. The banking world's not for everybody. You know, bear in mind, none of these are for everybody. So it's a matter of using them in the right combination. Finally, you have the Wall Street world, which is your stock market. And we know the pros to the stock market is that you can get some very good returns. Now, that return can be here today and gone tomorrow, which is the bad part. Okay. I don't like to see people depend on that stock market for income because we never know what it's going to give us. So the stock market gives us a lot of unknowns, and that's the bad side to it. Like I said, the good part is that you can get some very good returns if you have the time. And the stock market is typically, if you have 10 or more years, You know, you want to have some money in the stock market, and maybe even all the way throughout retirement, having some money in the stock market is good, but you don't have that money there that you're depending on for income. So in reality, it's a combination of these three that works to get you to and through retirement. It's no one particular item. And I know there's things out there like your precious metals, there's real estate. You know, we had the real estate bust in 2008. We know what happened then when the housing market, you know, dropped drastically, which is coming back. And then you have the precious metals, which is extremely volatile. Again, that's not where you put money that you want to depend on for income in either of those. Also, you got to bear in mind, if you're dealing with retirement plan money, if it's a 401k, IRA, precious metals and real estate typically doesn't work because you have that required minimum distribution. And now you've got to liquidate in order to get that required minimum distribution. So, you know, those are some instruments that you can use, but, you know, those are instruments that you would use with non-qualified money, and you would use those instruments after you utilize the three we just talked about. So it's a combination. There's no right or wrong answer here. It's what is going to suit your needs, what is going to get you to and through retirement successfully. And if you wonder what combination of those three you should be using, give us a call at 803-222-2892. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to have some listener questions. And I want to thank all of you out there who have sent in questions. You guys are absolutely vital to my show, and I thank you. When we come back, we're going to cover those listener questions, so don't go away.
You're listening to The Retirement Architect with Angela Sloan. Don't forget to call the team for a complimentary review. 803-222-2892. That's 803-222-2892.
And welcome back to The Retirement Architect. Promised you some listener questions, and Larry in Pineville started a consulting business this year. He says, in addition to my regular job, so his income is going to be really high compared to last year. Is there anything I can do to save money on taxes? And the answer to that, Larry, is absolutely. One question I would have for you is, are you an LLC? Have you incorporated? Because there's a lot of things that you could do having your own business that you can't do if you're a W-2 employee. You know, the end of the year is coming and the new tax year is starting. And once the tax year is over, it is what it is. So we probably need to get busy. So give me a call. It's 803-222-2892. Let's go to Paul in Charlotte. Paul says, what's your opinion of investments that require you to keep your money locked up for a certain period of time? I know a lot of annuities operate that way, as well as some hedge funds. What you're going to trade for time is benefits and return. Maybe oversimplify this. If you think of a CD, you go to the bank and you say, I want to buy a CD. And the bank says, well, if you let us hold the money for 30 days, we'll pay you a certain amount. If you let us hold that money for 90 days, for 3 months, we'll pay you a little bit more. If you let us hold it for 6 months, we'll pay you a little bit more. But if you let us hold it a year, we may pay you a whopping 0.5%. So you're trading time for benefits in return. And if you have questions on how to position that, then you need to give me a call so that we can sit down in person. It's 803-222-2892. I have Earl in Mount Holly, and he says, I've always managed my retirement accounts myself, and I definitely have trust issues that prevent me from letting someone else manage the accounts for me. But I know that as I get older, I'll be less capable of doing it all myself. How much control can I expect to retain over my assets when I have an advisor managing accounts for me? And Earl, I can tell you how we work here. You can maintain as much control as you want. I never try to take total control away from a client. The things that you need to take into consideration, and especially if you're married, you know, if you had died yesterday, who would take over those accounts? Who would help your spouse or your children? Or it might be your neighbor across the street. I don't know your situation. But could they take over and do what you're doing? And I can tell you there's going to be a dead period in there when nobody will be able to do anything. You know, if a probate account estate has to be opened, etc., you know, you got to wait for death certificates. So if you're managing everything yourself and you died yesterday and the market looks like it's getting ready to tank, whoever this money is to go to is stuck. You know, are they going to understand what you were doing with your wife or your, you know, whoever's going to get this money? Could they pick up and do what you're doing with it? odds are the answer to that is no. So that needs to be considered. And I think that there should be some amount that you're willing to give up control of. If you want to keep some of it and play, that's fine. You can have as much control as you want, but whoever you leave behind needs some place to go that knows what was going on in your head, that knows what your goals were and what you were trying to accomplish, and they're going to need somebody to guide them through that process of opening a probate estate, or if you have a trust, getting death certificates and making sure that the trust documents are filed with the right places, you know, where they need to go in order for them to take over those accounts. So you need to come up with a happy medium of how much are you willing to let go of control of now, and it can be gradual. You know, I've had people say, okay, you take half and I'm going to keep half, and then gradually, you know, once they got their feet wet and they became comfortable with how things worked, then they would start turning over more and more control because they realized that the less control they had, the more peace they had and the more fun they could have in their retirement. So your goal all these years when you worked your tail off was to have an enjoyable retirement and be able to do the fun things, not to worry over money every day. So you need to get alone by yourself and ask yourself, how much am I willing to give up control of? It doesn't have to be all of it at one time. And I don't advise you, if keeping control over your money is that important to you, I would never tell you to give up control of all of it at one time. I think in your case, it might need to be a gradual thing. But you bear in mind, you ask yourself the question, if I had died yesterday, what happens to these accounts today? Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate all these questions that are called in. You guys are so important to this radio show. So if you have questions, give us a call at 803-222-2892. Even if we can't get them on the air, we will still try to answer your questions for you as best we can. When we come back, we're going to talk about legacy planning. So don't go away. We'll be back in a moment.
Attention, business owners. Permanently and dramatically reduce your personal income taxes by 20 to 40% this year and for years to come. In America, there are two tax systems, one for the informed and one for the uninformed. Both are legal. Call Tax Law Solutions today to find out if you're paying too much. Call 787-200-3359. That's 787-200-3359 or online at taxlawsolutions.net.
I need an architect who's as good as I was.
I've got somebody better.
Yep, we do have somebody better. The best retirement architect around. Her name is Angela Sloan. Let's get back to the show.
And welcome back to The Retirement Architect. This is Angela Sloan. Folks, I promised you we're going to talk about legacy planning, and then we're going to go right into some couple issues due to lack of time. So when it comes to legacy planning, I've seen a turnabout take place throughout my career, you know, during the 30-plus years that I've done this. And most people realize that it's usually best to have an estate planning attorney helping you with your estate plan. And I would totally agree with that. I'm not an attorney. Don't even pretend to be. And, you know, I prefer to have an attorney involved. But it's also important for the financial advisor to be a part of that conversation. And, you know, that's kind of a rule with me. I need to be involved in that estate planning. You know, the role that I play is informing the attorney, you know, this is what we have here. And this is what we're trying to accomplish. And then that attorney comes back after your estate plan is in place and you've signed all the documents. I usually get an email from that attorney telling me how to designate beneficiaries in order for it to fit the plan that they've worked out for you. So it's very important that that plan is executed and that you have the follow through, which is the part that we play. So most clients view their legacy, it's different for different people. So let me kind of back up here. It used to be that I would hear, oh, you know, the market's done well, we've saved a lot, we have more money than we know what to do with, and we want to make sure that we can leave it to our kids efficiently. And it was doing a lot of estate planning, leaving things to their kids. Then we had 2000, 2001, 2002, 2011, 2008, 2015, and that's evolved. During that first decade of the 21st century, I started hearing things like, kids, nothing. It's going to take all we have to get us through retirement. If they wind up with an inheritance, they can count themselves lucky. And that's what I'm seeing more and more of. You know, our parents were big inheritors. You know, I won't be as big of an inheritor as my parents were because of that lost decade, as some people call it. So most retired people now, today, they're more focused on their own retirement. They're worried that they're not going to have enough money for themselves, much less money to leave behind for kids or grandkids. Now, I will tell you, as a grandparent, I understand when grandparents say, I want to help this grandchild with school. I understand that fully. But remember this always, the best thing you can do for your kids and your grandkids is to be able to take care of yourself. Because if you can't take care of yourself, that means you're going to be a burden to them. And I have promised my kids, I will not do that to them. You know, most of you know my story. My mother still lives with me today. She's in very poor health. And if it weren't for me and me being able to do what I'm doing, I don't know where she'd be. But I'll be the first to tell you, it's not easy for either of us. And I have to have you ask yourself a few questions. If you run out of money, which one of your kids are you going to move in with? Which one of them can pay your bills and pay for long-term care? Which one of them can quit their job and take care of you? So the best thing you can do for your kids and your grandkids is to be able to take care of yourself. I know that you would just love to be able to help grandkids with college, but that is not the priority. Those grandkids will be just fine. Even if you don't help them through college, they will find a way. You know, some of the basic mistakes that I see people make in their estate planning is, you know, blended families can be a big issue, not taking everything into consideration. One big mistake I see, and I always ask this question, and I get puzzled looks when I ask this question, like, why do you need to know that? I want to know, is the marriage of your children okay? I want to know, are your kids in a bad marriage? Does it look like there may be a divorce? Is one of your children married to the spouse from Hades? Maybe you just don't like that spouse. Maybe that spouse has done some things and given you reason that you don't like them. Because I'm going to tell you something. After someone dies, it brings out the best and worst in people. Seems like there's no in between. And every time, just about every time there's an issue in the family, it's not so much your children. It's usually the spouse of one of your children that's causing the problem. So sometimes you have to protect your children from themselves. And sometimes you see a problem that your child might not see. So if one of your children is in a situation like that, or maybe you've got a child that's been married three or four times, and you need to take that into account, because if you have a will and they inherit something, what they inherit is automatically marital property. So that means if there's a divorce, that spouse is entitled to half. If you have a trust, then that spouse is only entitled to what's been paid out of the trust. What's in the trust, they're not entitled to. So that's one big mistake that I see people make, is they don't take into consideration who their children are married to, or it may even be who your grandchildren are married to. Not doing estate planning across state lines. If you own real estate in more than one state, that can be an issue. If you have a will, you have to do probate in every state and every county that you own real estate in. And that can be very costly. So, you know, those are some questions that need to be answered. There's a lot that goes into estate planning. One of the big mistakes, and I'm amazed when people come in, I'll say, do you have a will? And they say, no, we've never done one. Well, let me tell you what happens in North and South Carolina if you die intestate. First of all, the lawyers tend to make a lot of money, so they love you guys. They love procrastinators. But in South Carolina, if you die without a will, the spouse gets half, and the other half is divided between the children. Picture that with a blended family. That can cause some real problems. If you have minor children, that can cause some real problems. And I had a situation where a gentleman committed suicide in their house, in their bedroom, and the wife wanted to sell the house, and she couldn't. She had two minor children. One was in the second grade and one was in kindergarten. The courts had to appoint the children an attorney because there was no will. Long story short, she had to sue the children for their half. It took her over a year to be able to sell that house. Now, granted, the insurance company, the homeowner's insurance, sent somebody in to clean up the mess, but she did not want to stay in that house after he had done that. But she didn't have a choice. So, in North Carolina, if you die without a will, then the spouse gets a child's portion. It's divided equally. So if you have a spouse and two children, they each get a third. Picture that in a blended family. And I'm here to tell you, you die without a will in either state, you have one child that's a horse's behind, and everybody has a problem. So if it's no more than a simple little thing that says, if I die, she gets it all, and if I die, he gets it all, you need to protect each other from that, and especially if it's a blended family. So, you know, those are some things that I've seen go wrong when somebody doesn't have a plan in place or a proper plan in place. It's extremely important to have somebody involved that knows the right questions to ask, because sometimes you don't know what to do. You don't even know what to ask. You've never been through something like this before. And you need to sit down with somebody who has been through it. So if you have questions in that area, give us a call. It's 803-222-2892. Now, I want to go into some ways that couples screw up their retirement. And not having an estate plan, of course, is one of them. But it's important that we get you on the same page with your retirement plan, because oftentimes couples don't talk about it at all. Or, you know, one's thinking one thing and one's thinking another. And I'll give you an example. I always ask, what's the most important thing to you here? Safety, return, or liquidity? Which one is the most important? Sometimes both of them will say safety. Sometimes she will almost always say safety and he'll say return. Well, you know what? We need you on the same page here. So we need to discuss this. So I'm asking questions because I want to know what each of them are thinking. They probably haven't talked about it at all and they're thinking two different things. So one area where they really screw up is making the wrong choice on how to handle the spousal benefit option on a pension. How many times have I looked at that and said, oh my goodness, why in the world did you make that decision? Because it gave me an extra $100 a month. Well, she is 11 years younger than you, and you die, and now she's going to take this huge income cut. Well, guess what? You have a room full of men, and this is a proven fact. Research has been done. You have a room full of men, and you ask them which one of you is going to die first, and they're all going to point fingers at each other. None of them thinks it's going to happen to them. And that's what he was thinking when he set up his pension the way he did. He wasn't going to die first. He's never going to die. But the way men look at it, if somebody had said, wait a minute, you've got an obligation that you need to feel, you've got promises that you need to keep, he would have looked at it a little bit different. But going at him with risk wasn't going to work with him because, like I said, a room full of men, they're going to point their finger at each other. The second way they screw up is not coordinating their Social Security claiming strategy. Folks, this is so important. Social Security is one of the biggest components to your retirement plan. And if you don't choose the right strategy, it could be very costly. So when I analyze this, I tell the computer I want to know how to maximize it. I want to know how to get the most out of their situation when it comes to Social Security. And then I want to know the second best way, and then I want to know the earliest possible. And you can look at the numbers. You can see it will tell you total how much each method will pay out over your lifetime and what will happen when the first one dies. And it's very important that you make the right decision because, you know, after a certain period of time, it's not reversible, and that stays with you for life. You cannot change it. Please call us, 803-222-2892. It is so important that you have the right strategy. And even if you're 2 to 3 years, 4 years, I don't care, even 5 years out, it's time to start looking at those strategies. So don't think you have to wait until right at retirement. The third way couples can really screw up is not talking about what they want to do in retirement before they actually retire. And like I said, they're not actually talking, but one's thinking one thing and one's thinking the other. I've got one couple, she wanted to do some traveling, and all he wanted to do was buy a tractor and ride his tractor. He didn't want to travel. That could be a problem. So what do you want to do? You know, find some common ground. Do both of you want it? Maybe one don't like to travel, but one does, but you can compromise. Take a trip a year. You know, it's not going to hurt the other one to go on a trip. So whatever those goals are, you need to know before you actually retire what it is you want to do in retirement. You know, one of you might want to do volunteer work or go to the mission field, and the other one says, I don't want to do that. I don't want to spend my retirement working. I worked all my life. It's time to have a little fun. I want to go on a cruise. Again, there's some common ground. Maybe you can go on a mission trip, and then several months later, take a nice, fun cruise. But you need to know this before you retire. Otherwise, it's almost like being a newlywed in that first year of marriage again. You know, as I've heard one minister say, when you get married, two become one. You go on the honeymoon, and you find out which one. I don't want that to happen when you retire, where you retire and then you find out to become one. We're going to retire and find out which one, right? So I want to thank you so much for listening to us today. Give us a call if any of these issues concern you. It's 803-222-2892. And I thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.